Hey guys, welcome back to the Staying Christian podcast. My name's Eli Chamley.
And I am Gavin Hobbs.
That's Gavin. This is the Staying Christian podcast. We're a small, not sophisticated talk show where we talk about becoming Christian, staying Christian. And what are you doing?
I'm bopping to the music.
Anyways,
continue with your description.
We'll get right into it. We've got an interview today with Gavin's uncle, David Dickerson. Fantastic man, really love him.
Fantastic interview.
Yeah,
you can hear about how he pretty much died from our horse jumping onto him.
He almost died, but yep. He didn't. Surprise! Oh, snap.
Listen to the podcast to find out. Shameless plug.
We're literally talking about. Okay. Anyways, it's a good episode, good interview. We hope you enjoy it, and thanks for tuning in.
Peace.
So today on the podcast, we have with us David Dickerson, and he's actually my uncle. So
what? I didn't know that.
I was about to say, wait, what? I'm gullible. Anyway, so if you wouldn't mind, if you could give us like a brief who you are, what you do, just like not your story yet, but I first want listeners to understand, okay, who is this person that we're about to hear their story unfold through the ages?
Through the ages. Well, yeah. I don't think I'm old enough to do it through the ages. So I'm David Dickerson, and I am Gavin's uncle. That's actually my full-time occupation.
Understandably so.
It has to be a full-time occupation.
No, I am his uncle, but so I am I guess a dad, kind of first and foremost. I know it. It's pretty apparent. So we've got 7 kids, and number 8 is on the way here. So my wife and I have been married for I guess 21 years, and I do design work. So I'm a product designer, which is. Do things like website design and mobile app design, not development. And I work from home. I've been doing that mostly freelance for the past about 16, 17 years, kind of unofficially a little bit before that too. So,
did you do that Village Creative business with my
dad? I
did.
Yeah. Yep, I did. I actually did it for a while before I worked with your dad. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Cool. So, without further ado, let's ask
the question.
The question. One question to rule them all.
So,
you go ahead.
Well, what we usually do is we kind of ask, since we're calling this section like of episodes the becoming Christian stuff. So, we're asking people who are older and who we think are wiser than us. How they became a Christian and what their kind of journey through that was. So how did you become a Christian?
Okay. Wow. Well, I guess first I was pretty much raised in Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So my folks, Gideon and Faith, they raised me. but... They were part of a Baptist church in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was basically raised in that Baptist church until I was about 10 years old or so. My dad was the music minister for the church, and my mom played the piano. So we pretty much did church all the time, you know, where we were at every service and so on. You know, we homeschooled, so I was homeschooled growing up, and yeah, there was, you know, I guess, you know, I always knew of God, you know, from a very early age, and, you know, we had, I don't know the best way to say it, I guess, you know, more than just nominal Christianity in the home, you know, mom and dad were pretty, I would say they really loved God a whole lot. And I know things, you know, would go through seasons and so on, but, you know, like my mom used to read us stories about missionaries and so on all the time. Y'all know Jim Elliot, Nate mm-hmm. Saint, and all that. So I was kind of raised on stories like that. And so I think it was just kind of always a set thing in my head that, you know, you're going to grow up and follow God. Now, you know, that's all fine when you're a kid, but of course, mm-hmm. once you hit the age of starting to try to think for yourself and, you know, a teenager, then that's where things get a little bit more real and interesting. Yeah. So when I was about 10 or 11, I guess it was back in about 1990. So my family is actually a pretty large family as well. I've got six siblings, and I'm number two. Mm-hmm. They kept trying, but they really couldn't improve on. But anyway,
number one, number two, man, top of the line.
No, if only that was true. And they were like, "We got to do better than this."
Yeah,
we got to do better than this.
I was gonna say, was your parents raising you when you said that earlier? Was that the full time job as well?
That's right. So, anyway, they were gonna have a home birth with my younger sister Amy, and she was number five. And so they had a midwife come and help them with the birth, and that was Habla, and that's how we met Noah and Habla. Mm-hmm. And you know, at that time they were doing kind of a home fellowship sort of thing out of their house, and they lived, I think it was about 2 hours away or so mm-hmm. from where we were. We were down in the Orlando, Florida area. And they're up in Seminole County, a little town called Geneva. So we visited them a few times, and I really just kind of fell in love with the folks there. My parents really hit it off with them, and I know they were intrigued by what was going on there. I'm not going to give like a whole history of
the
church thing, but you know, for me, that was kind of a pretty big pivotal point, I think, because, you know, it's not like there wasn't a lot of nice people or so on in our church, but it was just, I don't know, it was just church. Like, I didn't like going to church when I got to be a, you know, 9 or 10 or so on. You know, well, first you always had to wear slacks and a belt and a button-up shirt, or, mm-hmm. you know, I hated dressing up. And it just didn't, I don't know. It was boring. Honestly, it was just kind of boring to me. But we would go out and spend time with this other group, and, you know, they'd have meetings in the house, and, you know, for me, it was kind of just a lot of fun because the kids would be all running amok mm-hmm. and, jumping on a trampoline and all that kind of stuff. And, so, you know, I wasn't necessarily enamored with those folks because, you know, I was seeing a lot of, you know, God there. It was just friends more than anything. And
yeah,
long story short, you know, my folks have become pretty disillusioned, I guess, with, you know, kind of the traditional church thing going on there and that they've been part of. And they're pretty dedicated. They've been part of that church for about 15 years, you know, before I was even born. Mm-hmm. And, had some bad experiences. I think something to the effect of my dad was a cabinet maker, and he had some situations where, you know, the market kind of went bad, and some of the jobs, like the kitchens that he would make cabinets for and install, were really expensive kitchens. They were, you know, tens of thousands of dollars sometimes. And I know he ended up having to go bankrupt because, you know, some folks went bankrupt or so on. He couldn't make payroll. He ended up in some legal situations over mm-hmm. it and so on. I remember we went for a time without power, you know, to our house. And,
wow.
And so, you know, the church, they basically, the church we were part of, I mean, they gave us a key to the gym and let us go take showers down there and so on. But, from what I, you know, I was young. I didn't know really what was going on at the time, but kind of hearing about it later, I think there was some you know, kind of speculate and condemnation kind of coming from various people in that church, you know, maybe like maybe this was judgment for something secret going on or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
So I think those sorts of things really kind of just lent to an overall, you know, disillusionment. Like mom and dad were looking for something that they weren't finding. So when they kind of met this other group, they got pretty excited and they tried to get other people excited and they didn't get anybody else excited. So we ended up moving out there and, or at least close by. It was kind of, at that time, it was really hard to find housing nearby. So we were a lot closer, but still not super close. And just kind of joined that group. And that was a ride, you know, so that would have been back in 1991 or so, I think. And there was a pretty small group of people, just a few families. And so I would have been about 11 or 12. And then over the next few years, you know, Gabe and your folks' family came, like a year or so later. And,
so you were there first playing basketball and then my dad all tall and came along and joined you guys.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. So we, you know, we're just a bunch of boys. Boys all hung out together and so on. But it grew pretty quick because, you know, my folks came to that group because of their experience with a home birth. And that kind of turned into sort of a ministry thing. I think my mom even started, well, I don't think I know. She was a midwife for a while as well.
Yeah.
And so we would just have a bunch of people. We would kind of do like a meeting on Sunday, like a kind of a gathering to get together and worship and so on. Then after that meeting, they'd have another meeting where it was a home birth meeting and all these people who were looking at having a birth or who had had a birth or so on, they would come. That'd be sometimes a pretty big gathering of people. And, you know, one of the things that was neat was, you know, God would just show up at these births and do pretty amazing things. And it got a lot of people excited and it was kind of an opportunity to talk to them about, you know, following God together in a real close walk together. So the church really grew. So I got baptized when I was 13. I was about to turn 14, but I was 13. And what's funny is we had done a slumber party the night before for I think Jason's birthday or something like that, and we stayed up all night long. Like we didn't go to sleep. I think I might have fallen asleep, you know, after it got light the next day. And the next day, though, that was on a Saturday. The next day was Sunday. And we, you know, the whole church met out at a park to have a gathering together.
Yeah, and then the baptism.
Yeah, and some folks were getting baptized and so on. And I wanted to be a part of that. And, you know, I think that was actually real. I wanted to follow God, you know. I don't think I ever at that point in my life had struggled with kind of wondering if God was real or anything. So I was like, yeah, if they're doing this, I want to be a part of it too. But I still remember kind of looking back at that time, I was like, man, I was punch drunk. I was just so, so sleepy. So yeah. Who knows how that decision was affected in my sleep. But I remember just, you know, there was a big lake that park was at, and we had done the baptisms. And so we were all out in the lake. There was probably about six or eight people or so getting baptized. And we were standing around holding hands, praying beforehand. And I just remember like just feeling dizzy because I was so sleepy. But so that was,
I've heard that. I remember reading my driver's handbook when I was studying because I actually studied for my driver's test.
Yeah.
And they, why are you laughing? Because I'm a bad driver.
I'm not saying anything.
I think he's mocking you because he didn't study.
Lame.
I studied. Okay.
Okay.
Man.
Okay. Sure. But they said that driving while sleep deprived is just as dangerous as driving drunk.
Sure.
And I was I've always remembered that. So like when I get 2 hours of sleep and then the next day I'm like, oh, hope I do fine today, I guess.
Yeah, it's not near as dangerous as driving while sleeping, but it is
right
pretty bad.
So wait, you made this decision to get baptized the day of the baptism?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there wasn't like any previous deep thought about baptism or anything like...
No, I knew what it was. No, I knew what it was, and I guess that would have been a good thing to say. Like, we, you know, there had been several baptisms, you know, of different people in the church and, and so on. And, you know, that was kind of unusual, you know, I think for them. It was mainly adults, and it was mainly Christian adults, you know, who had already at some point in their lives gotten baptized. But, you know, they kind of came to this point where things had changed so much, and they kind of looked back, and I think they wanted to get rebaptized, a lot of them. Not everybody was, you know, but so it was happening, I would say, relatively often at that point. You know, it was something I was familiar with. But yeah, no, it wasn't something I really talked with beforehand with my folks or anything like that, that I remember. You know, we had, you know, that being said, we had talked a lot, you know, over the years about what it meant to follow God and so on. But yeah, when it came to that day, I was like, I want to do this. And, you know, my dad was like, that's, yeah, that's fine. That's good, you know. And so I did. And, you know, and I was excited. And then I went home and went to sleep. But you know, I think it was kind of odd as well because being real young, you know, maybe it wasn't just being young. I don't know what I expected from that, you know. There wasn't like some magic that happened, I would say, you know, feeling wise. And I know you guys both know exactly what, no,
sprinkled dust on you as you came up out of the water.
No. And, there wasn't any visible tongues of fire or anything like that. But you know, I don't know that that really bothered me. I think it was just like, okay, this is really what I want to do. Now, you know, after that, you know, I think I was 13 at the time. So, I don't know if y'all know anything about 13-year-olds.
I was one.
14-year-olds or anything like that.
I have 1 year of experience with 13-year-olds.
Right. Right. So anyway, it was kind of, you know, things happened in my life where, you know, we were still part of that church, and, you know, to this day, I've been part of that church. It changed, you know, the way it looked a whole lot, but, I obviously, you know, well, not obviously, I just went through times where making the decision to do what was right, you know, or to do what I wanted to do, wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be, you know, and
you're telling me,
you know, everything from, I don't know, pursuing girls or even just being lackadaisical about pursuing God, you know. I think that's even more the core thing. Like I was a kid, I was doing kid things, and now I think most folks would probably look back at my childhood and be like, wow, you were such a you know, pretty good back then and so on, but not really, you know. I was just me doing my own thing. I didn't really have any sort of compunction to, I don't know, do something radical and really follow God with everything. Now, a lot of that was probably just due to peer pressure, you know. It was like, you know, all this stuff was going on with the church, and we were all kind of part of it. And it was kind of weird. Like, I look back at it now, and it's like, I was watching all of these adults make really big, radical choices to follow God. And I think, you know, I'm glad for that because that was, I feel like that was kind of one of the things that really kept me through the harder teen years of my life, you know, because I'm watching a demonstration of people making some pretty hard choices and going through hard things. And I know as a parent now, I've kind of got that drilled in my head. It's not always the easiest thing to do, but you know, you wonder what's the best thing to do for your kids and
as a demonstration.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because I know that's what really helped me, you know, watching my parents, watching other people's parents and, you know, other adults, really kind of set this demonstration of what it meant to follow God with your whole heart. And I could tell this isn't easy. And I think that really kind of, that helped actually that it wasn't easy. It helped that everything wasn't always rosy, that there was a lot of conflict sometimes, you know, and, you know, I don't know how much y'all have gotten into on Rose Creek Village and what it looked like back in the day, you know,
right.
You know, on this podcast, but, we went through some pretty wild things, you know,
mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I don't know. So anyway, fast forward, yep. Try not to ramble too much here.
No. You're totally good.
It's what we like.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of any sort of significant things. You know, there were significant things, you know, that were probably, they may seem a little silly to people, but, you know, like I had a girlfriend. I had like one, you know. And, you know, I know I behaved in ways that ended up kind of hurting her, hurting other people. And that was a hard thing for me to wrestle with, mm-hmm. you know. I see at this point that was kind of probably something the first time I really had to kind of wrestle with the potential evil inside, you know, not like I never did anything bad before that, but I don't know, when you're kind of doing ad hoc bad things, sometimes you just kind of turn a blind eye to, you know, you're running with the pack or whatever. But when it impacts other people, that's where it's kind of,
yeah,
to me, that's always been, the harder thing to take, you know, and
sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes what you mm-hmm. need to take.
Yeah. So, you know, when we were, let's see, a few years later, it was about, I guess 1995, you know, we met some folks from up in Tennessee, and, you know, they wanted some people from that church that we were part of to come up there and help them start a fellowship. And, you know, long story short, we ended up sending some folks up there, and over the next, you know, half year to a year, you know, as a church, everybody had grown so close. Like, you know, we had good friends, but there was a real love that got given us together, and we didn't like being apart from each other. So they all decided that they were going to just move everybody, whoever wanted to go. You know, it wasn't a mandatory thing, but everybody made the decision. I don't think anybody didn't make the decision, actually. And at that time, there was close to 100 people in the fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another one of those things, watching that happen, you know, and we were one of the last families to actually move up to Tennessee. We weren't the last, I think, Semka and actually my wife's family were the last,
mm-hmm.
but, and Nathaniel, I think those were kind of the last three, if I remember right. And it took about a year or so to get everybody migrated north, you know, because what they had to do was quit their jobs, sell their houses, you know, pack everything up.
About how many families total was that? Do you know, like just a rough estimate?
Man,
20, 30?
Maybe. I don't think it was quite 20. Hmm. I would say something more like 15. And that might have been high. I don't know. There's some larger families, you know.
Seemed like there were two families.
Kind of. I'm pretty sure we had somewhere between 80 and 90 people in the church at the time. There were a few families actually shared houses together. Not mm-hmm. everybody did, but a good amount did at that point, you know. And that had kind of started because, you know, Noah's family always had somebody living in their house. You know, they were taking care of like Dossie's family and, you know,
right.
single mother, and so on. But then there was a couple situations like that that came up where, like I know, we ended up moving in with Dossie's family as well, so we can kind of help take care of her family. And there was varying degrees of success in the beginning on that, you know, everybody having to figure that out, living together, so on. But sometimes that was kind of like one of the only ways we could get together in the same locality, because it was kind of hard finding houses nearby in that area, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, so we did that move, and watching everybody do that, you know, that was a, that was another pretty big impactful thing, you know, watching, you know, people do something that seemed to come right out of the Book of Acts, you know, leaving everything, and just because they loved each other, just because they wanted to follow God together. And then moving up to a place in Tennessee that was like half finished, and or not even half finished, it's still being built. And,
cow pasture.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no. This was before the cow pasture, wasn't it? This was.
Yeah. This is Masham Inn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we, when we moved up, you know, it was basically a house, like a 3 or 4 bedroom farmhouse, and they had built a big addition on the back of it with like 8 bedrooms and four bathrooms or something like that, and a big dining hall in the bottom. It's like 3 stories.
One of my friends at work, she works in the same area as me. She lives just down the street from there.
Yeah.
And so she's like, oh, everybody talks about that house and the weird people who used to live there. And I just laugh at her. And
those weird
she,
people.
She talks
was us.
About the misconceptions and all this. And I was just like, I knew those people. I know those people.
Yeah. So. Well, I can kind of understand people freaking out. I mean, that's not a very normal thing when a large group of people just moves en masse to,
to one house.
Yeah. And around here in Tennessee, like, you know, one of the famous times that happened was when, you know, the hippie train from California came through and started the farm.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. You know, just a long caravan of tons of school buses and RVs came trolling through, you know.
Wow.
So they kind of had some, you know, they didn't know what they were looking at. Anyway, so I would have been about 17 by the time we landed up here, and I loved God. I think I really did love God. It's kind of funny. I don't know how I necessarily compartmentalized, you know, the struggles that I would have, you know, on the one hand, and feeling, you know, trying to pursue God on the other. But, you know, just young, not knowing much. So when we got up here to Tennessee, pretty soon after that, you know, I'd taken a shine to Arielle, who's now my wife, you know, so I would have been 18 around then. And that was kind of another, I would say, linchpin moment in life, because I got pretty lonely after we moved up. My whole circle of friends had pretty much changed because everybody had moved up, you know, for the most part. Most of my friends had all kind of come up to Tennessee, and our alliances all kind of shifted. It was very dramatic growing up. I don't know.
We like know a, about dramatic.
Geez, I don't know what in the world. I look back now, I'm like, for some reason, like, there was like 2 or 3 cliques of kids, and like, you could only be part of one at a time. You know,
right.
And
right.
I don't know who made those rules up or whatever. It just kind of flowed that way. Yeah. Personalities grated against each other and so on.
Yeah, we know about that.
Yeah. So that was really frustrating. But when I got up here, it was like, you know, that thing I'd mentioned earlier about, you know, having a girlfriend and not behaving very well to her. And, you know, that was kind of one of the problems, because that had caused some hard feelings amongst other people in my friend group, you know?
Right.
And so then I didn't know anything about it till I got up to Tennessee, and I was met with a very cold shoulder from everybody I thought would be very happy to see me. And they were not happy to see me. And so it was I don't know, it was kind of lonely, you know? And that was kind of weird because we had a lot of people. We had almost 100 people living out of that one house and RVs and, you know, holes in the ground and so on all around it, you know. But so anyway, so our mutual friend Simka, she played matchmaker. And,
oh, of course.
Yeah. And long story short, you know, I took a shine to Ariel, and I don't know. I thought she took a shine to me. She kind of denies it at this point, at least that early.
It's how she keeps that hold on you.
But, anyway, so like I said, her family was, one of the last family, if not the last family to move up.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I spent a good deal of time with her or whatever. And at that point, I think I was just reeling. I didn't know what to do with myself very well. So I was just kind of pursuing her, like, you know, hey, will you be my girlfriend, without actually saying that, you know, because that was kind of a, you know, having boyfriend girlfriend thing wasn't a very looked well upon thing in our community. Right. So I wouldn't have said that, but yeah, but I'd followed her around, you know, I was giving her a lot of attention and so on. And I don't honestly remember how long that went on. It wasn't that long, but this little woman, Havla, she pulled me aside one day in the kitchen. She's like, would you leave her alone? Can't you see you're distracting her from God? And it was like somebody walloped me upside the head with, you know, with a frozen trout. Okay. It was shocking.
That's rather specific. Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know. It was just kind of like the lights clicked on. And I just, you know, I think what I'm trying to illustrate here is there's always kind of the tension, the push and the pull between the things I wanted to do, you know, the pulls of, you know, the culture or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the thing inside of me that wanted to follow God, you know, God calling me to follow him more and so on. And so when that would actually rise to the surface where I could see it for what it was, because apparently I was just dumb as a rock, then, you know, I would have kind of these moments in life. There was kind of these milestones, and I'm not talking about all of them, but these are a few of them. And that one was one that kind of really made me wrestle. So I remember at that point, I wished I had done this a lot earlier, but, you know, for whatever reason I didn't, but this time I did. I went to my dad. I was like, told him what was going on, and, you know, basically got somebody involved in my life to know, hey, I'm really having a hard time with this and I want to do better, you know? And so then came the radical years, you know, then it was just kind of like, I was like going to dive all in, you know?
Yeah.
And that was a real, you know, that was a pretty sweet time, I remember. You know, I think at this point, like, I kind of wish that I could have had a bit more wisdom around some of the things, you know, decisions being made and all that. But it was all in, you know, for good reasons. But, like, I remember one time I decided, you know, I just want, basically, I got too much stuff. It's weighing me down. I just want to be free to do whatever God wants me to do. Maybe he's got me, you know, maybe he wants me to go to the mission field or something. And so I basically gave away everything I had except for like a sleeping bag, a pillow, my guitar, and some clothes. And that was it.
Wow.
You know, and
goodness.
So I kind of went,
you were almost before minimalism was cool.
Yeah. It was more like asceticism, you know? You know, and that didn't last all that long. But it was exciting, you know, because I was a bit more free to kind of immerse myself in the things that were going on in the church and things God was doing with me and with other people and so on. And, you know, this thing that had started off as kind of this infatuation, with a girl, you know, that was kind of the big struggle at that point in my life, because it was like, how do you overcome that? How do you get rid of it? How do you, you know, what do you mm-hmm. do? And well, it's not like you just switch the light off, you know? So it was more learning discipline, learning how to be, learning how to deny yourself, you know, like you gotta, you know, if you're going to follow God and, you see that what you're doing is just kind of inherently selfish, you know, then you should not do that thing, you know, but that doesn't mean that you don't then want to do that thing necessarily. Yeah. Right? And, so, you know, that was a pretty long learning process. The long and the short of that though was, you know, essentially this silly infatuation, it did go away. But it got replaced by actual genuine love. Like I actually fell in love. And, but at that point, you know, I was kind of charting this course with going, I want to walk with God. Mm-hmm. And it didn't mean I didn't mess up. I had all kinds of mess ups and, you know, but, and I probably just, I'm someone who kind of can overthink things. So, you know, when we started talking about actually getting married and so on, you know, like I analyzed that to death. I know I probably about burned my wife out, you know. Are we supposed to get married, you know, or not? Yeah, we're supposed to get married. So so we got engaged when we were 18, I guess. No, I guess we would have been 19.
You guys are both 19?
I don't remember. I'm terrible with dates.
Oh, okay. No worries.
Don't tell my wife. Are you going to broadcast this?
oh, no. She might hear it.
Yeah. I don't remember how long we were engaged for, but it wasn't. I don't think it was a year. So we had basically, prior to being engaged, you know, we had walked together and pursuing a relationship, trying to see, you know, is this what, are we right for each other? Is this what God, you know, is God going to bless us or not? And then we ended up, you know, asked her to marry me. I'll tell you all that story another time.
I think I've heard it.
Yeah.
There was rain involved and
everything going not according to plan. Yes.
It wasn't like that scene from Pride and Prejudice. I assume that's how they all go.
No, that was way too romantic. No. I mean, you can't have something that romantic when you're going to ask a girl to marry you. There has to be crutches and a sudden storm and
everything.
Lots of nervousness. Yeah. And overprotective adults with flashlights looking in windows and so on. So, yeah. So anyway, we got married. I should say we got engaged, and then we ended up moving from that place. The whole church moved to the cow pasture that you were referring to earlier. Yeah, out here. So I think we moved out in the summertime or so on, and towards the end of September 25th, we got married up there on the hill. In the torchlight, because we didn't have any power, at least up there. And that was pretty awesome.
That was in the evening, so that's why you had torchlight?
Well, we did a two-day wedding. I mean, you're going to do a wedding, you got to do it right. So we did like a fun day, the first day, where, you know, we had games, and they did like a horse jousting and all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah.
You sit on the sidelines and like pluck grapes and...
No,
not that they actually joined.
Well, I didn't do the horse jousting, but yeah, we did games and stuff. Yeah. And then the next day, we did a big feast out under a tree, and yeah, and then had kind of, I don't know what to call it, the celebration or the ceremony.
Yeah,
you know, right. On top of the hill, and that took a long time because basically it was her and I sitting there in front of everybody, and each family taking turns coming up and blessing us. You know, it was pretty awesome. We rode up on horses and rode away on horses too. Yeah. And they were draft horses. Yeah. They were
draft horses.
Yeah, they were big horses. Yes.
Oh, okay.
So oh, yeah.
Yeah. And we rode them bareback, and a draft horse's bareback is Uncomfortable.
Not comfy.
So, anyway. So, yeah, we got married, and that was, like, the day after I turned 20.
Wow.
So, I think, you know, at that point, it was, like, there were still things, like, even, like, some secret sins and stuff that I was just struggling with that, you know, I think I hope they would go away, you know, in time or whatever.
Just blow away.
Yeah, and they didn't, you know, and they... You know, honestly, they came out a bit more, a little bit later, a couple years later or so on. And I won't go into that too much, but, you know, it's not an uncommon thing. And but it was pretty devastating to me when that kind of came out. And, you know, basically I had some brothers get involved in my life, and I think I was about 22, and, you know, at that point, you know, our marriage was struggling pretty good, you know, just being a couple of years into it, not knowing what in the world we were doing and so on. And I'm just grateful we had a bunch of people who loved us around us, you know, because I don't know, honestly, at that point, with, you know, as much as I knew and as she knew or whatever, if we would have been able to survive. But we did, you know, God was good to us. But I remember, so I'm saying this whole long story to kind of get into this point, because, you know, I hear these stories sometimes from other people where, you know, like they didn't know God at all, and then they come to know God, and it's a very sudden change, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I think I used to wish, like, I wish that could have been me.
Yeah.
You know?
I know what you're talking about.
It just
about.
Seems like everything's kind of very black and white. Like, before it was black, and now it is white. And it's never been the case for me. In some ways, I feel like I came at things very backwards, or, you know, mm-hmm. just the long road. Everything's the long road, you know. So, you know, these are all silly things. There's lots of other things besides. But I look back, and, you know, God was just good to me the whole time. You know, like, I didn't know how much he loved me. And I think that just walking in, you know, in a level of darkness, walking in some sin, whatever, it does things to your brain. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't see things that are true. And, you know, I was able to just kind of, for a long time, just think I was a good person. You know, I was just a good person, just had some struggles or whatever. And, you know, when the lid came off of that kind of a thing, then, you know, it was devastating for me, because all of a sudden things were black and white. They were very black and white, you know, and I got to see just how black I was. Now, you know, I think I've had people comment that before that maybe that wasn't such a... There's been people who deal with worse things in life, and I know there's all kinds of things that people go through, and I'm not trying to compare to anything like that, but, you know, all I know is I hit a point, you know, where I did not like myself mm-hmm. at all. You know, it was like I walked around, you know, I'm sure there was a level of depression. I wouldn't have known to call it depression at that point, mm-hmm. you know, you know, I didn't go on very long, but just seeing how much, you know, my actions and choices I had made in life had come back and hurt, you know, especially like my wife, my family, people around me. Like, I don't like hurting people, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of silly to look back and see just how much, you know, I have hurt people in the past, and, you know, how sometimes your idiocy can make you do that. But, you know, I've got a pretty tender heart. I don't like hurting people. Yeah. You know, I like loving on people. And that was really hard for me. And I just did not like the person, I guess, because I had gone for so long thinking I was one way, and then waking up to find out that was never true. For the most part, yeah. That was never true. It got less true and less true the older I got, you know? And, you know, I just was astounded by how could I not have seen this, you know? And I would wake up just kind of with this pit in my stomach, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of a loathing of myself, not knowing what to do. You know, I didn't know how to get it out of it, you know? And when I say that, I just mean like, how do you change? Mm-hmm. Like, how do you change? And, but in the midst of all that, you know, I had people around me and I had people around me who knew me. They knew the worst about me, you know, and they loved me. They showed me love, mm-hmm. you know. And then I remember I had a couple of experiences right in that period of time where I would be by myself, you know, and really struggling and just feeling God draw near me and really just feeling love.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just about the biggest impact on my life ever. You know, I think it was the first time I really richly encountered the love of God directed at me, you know, or at least being able to understand what it was. And maybe it was just because I needed it so bad at that point, you know, mm-hmm. when I was realized just how undeserving that I was, you know. Because I didn't love myself.
Right.
Not anymore. I think I loved myself a whole lot before then, but then I didn't love myself at all, you know? And that was when God chose to draw near me, you know? Mm. So, you know, it's funny because after that, I was just kind of, I was all in, you know? And I still had, you know, I still had all kinds of things I needed to change in my head and heart and so on, but who doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny. So I kind of look at that and be like, and that was the point in which I was saved. But no, I think that was just the point where it was like, I took a step forward more like an adult in the Lord, you know, to follow the Lord rather than just a child. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being a child. I just look back and go, I had a lot of growing up to do the whole time. And, mm-hmm. He was there with me the whole time and let me grow up.
Right.
Helped me to grow up, you know? And then not long after that, you know, even kind of while I was in the midst of things, and I honestly don't remember the exact circumstances around it. I just remember I was talking to an older guy in the church. He was, at that time, he would have been one of the shepherds in the church. And I was complaining about another guy. I honestly don't remember who, you know, wouldn't tell you anyway, but I don't remember who. I don't remember. I just remember, you know, I'd gotten offended or something. And when I was talking to him, I remember realizing he was kind of half listening to me, you know, and he was kind of waiting to say something. And when he did say something, man, he kind of lamb blasted me. He's like, you know, basically he just went, you're just prideful. You just got a lot of pride. And that's kind of the root of a lot of the problems that you are running into in your life. And it was kind of like this light clicked on, you know, and, everything, you know, when he said that, I remember there kind of being this choice to make as to how I was going to take this. Like, yeah. I remember having the very conscious decision to make, am I going to be offended with this or am I going to listen to this? And thankfully I chose to listen to it, you know, but, it was scary because when I listened to it, then that was kind of the last thing. Like that was the last rug at that point that needed to be pulled out from under me. And that just wrecked me. It really just kind of wrecked me. But I had already kind of started to really fall in love with God and saw his love for me. So it was a good wrecking, you know. It wasn't just leaving me stranded with nowhere to go or anything like that. It was just kind of tearing down this picture of myself that I had built up over the years. And that was kind of the last vestiges of that picture. Mm-hmm. It got trampled on and smashed to a pulp. And then that was great, you know, because after that, I would... I don't remember a lot, honestly, of distinct things, less, you know, big events or anything like that. I just started to try to be more responsible, love people. I was a little bit more humble, you know.
Yeah.
I had this thing in my back pocket of like some compassion for other people because, you know, I actually saw that I was a little bit worse.
Yeah. I had a lot of people tell me after like talking to me about stuff that happened with me, because I had a lot of people close to me when I had a lot of stuff when I'm not going to go into all the stuff that I did, but
I was a terrible person.
I want details.
Horrible person.
But they said that your story was similar to mine in that way. And I'm like, wow, because I'd always kind of known God a little bit because I grew up around with my dad and my dad.
Yeah.
He was a Christian for a long time, ever since I've known him. So growing up and always hearing about it, I was like, yeah, okay, I believe this and I believe that. And until I finally had some big things happen where I had to face that I wasn't a good person on my own, and I had to figure out how to be better and that I couldn't be better on my own. It was a really big step in that.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, even those things where we used to talk some about how God will kind of rewrite history, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you start facing things in life, where you start seeing yourself and your need for God and, you know, just how corrupted you are or how evil you are. And that evil can take all kinds of forms. You know, maybe you're just greedy. Maybe you're just prideful or just mean. I don't know. Or
probably the really
or
mean
one. Or indifferent, you know.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of ways that that shows up. But I've just always seen God kind of, he knows what buttons to push. Yeah. You know,
I mean, he knows us.
Yeah, he knows what string to pull on, and all of a sudden you find yourself naked, and that is uncomfortable, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, when you find yourself like that, you're like, how can this ever go away? How can this ever, you know, and it never goes away in the sense of that is a memory, you know, like it really happened. But God rewrites history because those things become then a force for good, you know, like to me, they give me compassion. That was an important thing. Still is an important thing to me. You know, I still find myself like, I don't know. I'm not saying I'm an immensely loving, compassionate person, but I know for sure, like, there's kind of a constant inner monologue when I hear about people or things happening that are bad, being like, I don't, you know, at least most of the time, I don't exalt myself above that person. Yeah. Like, I would be just like that. I would be just like that, you know? And that, you know, that's just a gift from God, you know. It's not because I'm a good person. Quite the opposite. But, and not only that, then the things that, you know, your struggles, the overcoming of those struggles, they give you something to own, you know. And I've been able to own something around that. And I hope that's helped and had an impact on other people. I know there's been a fair bit of, you know, sharing with and reaching out to other folks who I'm close to around similar things. You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's kind of funny because after that, then, you know, we started doing things like, trying to take care of other, I don't know how to really describe it, the way that the church was kind of operating at that point. There was sort of a few different shepherds, and there was some other guys who would kind of help do some shepherding work. I don't know what else to call that. It's nothing, there wasn't anything really superficial or anything like that. There was just, we had a lot of people at one point, you know, there was probably over 300 people.
Yeah, there was a lot here.
Yeah, and a lot of households and so on. There was a lot to do in the sense of just helping people out, hearing problems and so on. And, you know, and I kind of got thrown into that pretty young. I would have been about 24 at the time.
They asked you to do shepherding work?
Well, it wasn't really shepherding work, I guess.
It was just helping.
I look back, well, it was just, you know, practically all it meant was that we kind of divvied up different households, in the sense of I would go and check on people in a household, you know, and see if there was anything I could do to help them, or if they needed anything, you know, like if they needed to get in contact with a shepherd or something like that, that,
yeah,
you know, I could help facilitate that or so on. So it was kind of like, I guess the only thing I've seen, you know, that was similar like that in, that comes to mind right off the top of my head in the Bible was, you know, Moses having different people over different people and so on down, you know. But it wasn't like official shepherding work. But it did require some leveling up and responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't sitting down counseling people or anything like that. But, you know, it got me out of my own life and problems into, yeah, you know. And yeah, so things just progressed from there, in the sense of, you know, we always had things going on, you know, activities and in the village and in the church. And, you know, it was just a pretty tight part.
Yeah.
You know, always going to different meetings and being parts of different groups and so on. And, yeah, and then eventually, you know, my family ended up moving out to California. And we kind of did a home fellowship out there.
With Gavin.
Gavin's family came out there after we'd been there almost a year or something like that. And then their family moved out there, and we had a few other families already out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real sweet time. You know, and ultimately we ended up moving back here, to the village. You know, and now, you know, we've been back here for a few years. You know, there's seasons for everything. And like I just mentioned, you know, at one point there was like 300 some odd people here, and now there's, you know, maybe a third of that.
Yeah.
If not, right, if that, you know. And the way, you know, the way we operate here and so on has really changed over the years. And I would say a lot of those changes have really, you know, I'm just being honest, they've rattled me a lot, you know.
Yeah.
But I've come to see that's a good rattling. Just like most of the rattlings in life, it's good.
Yeah.
You know.
Shakes off all the unnecessary stuff.
So that kind of brings us up to date in a very kind of broad brushy, vague sort of way.
Yeah. That's fine.
You know.
That's what everybody does.
So now I'm 41 and got lots of kids. You know? And we're living here, and my wife is a midwife. So, you know, it's been a hard year, just like it has for everybody. But with, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic going on, you know, with all the social distancing and everything like that, in some ways I kind of felt like that hit our family a little bit harder than a lot of other folks, because my wife was having to care for a lot of babies and new moms and so on. So we had to isolate a lot more.
Yeah.
And a lot more carefully, I think, than some other folks. And so it's been some seasons of just loneliness,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I'm not used to. And so we're kind of coming out of that season a bit, but
yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, since that pretty much brings us up to date.
Up to date, yeah.
So, a portal opens up over there, that side of the room, and it just swirls up and there's sparks going everywhere.
Like in Doctor Strange.
And you see little David right there. And he had just finished selling all his stuff. And he's just sitting there with his guitar and his sleeping bag and his pillow. And you've got like 10 seconds to walk through the portal because the portal's closing to ask him, not ask him, but tell, give him advice. What would be your advice you gave to David sitting there? He's looking into your eyes, big brown eyes, strumming on the guitar. He's like, what are you going to say?
Oh my gosh.
Ground control to Major Tom.
Yeah. I would probably tell him. It's funny. It sounds kind of cheesy to say it like this, but that's a cheesy question. So
sure,
it's
true. I know that.
But this isn't cheesy. I would tell him, you know, Jesus really, really, really loves you. And you ought to just learn how to love him back, you know, get to know him. Just get to know him.
Mm-hmm.
And that would take up all my 10 seconds. And
just walk back to the portal.
Yeah.
So long, little David.
Yeah. Because, you know, to me, that's been the most important thing. And, you know, I mentioned earlier in this talk somewhere that I always feel like I kind of come to things a bit backwards. And one of the features that I've come to know from a lot of other folks' story is usually, you know, the kind of the pattern I see is when people don't know God, they come and they experience the love of God. They come to know Jesus. And then, so they become Christian that way, and then they want to find the church. They want people to be with, you know? And so then they find people to be with, and that's kind of the way. And for me, it was the opposite.
Yeah, it's people
you know,
to be with.
I grew up with people to be with, you know? I grew up in it. And
then you go, oh, this is what you guys are all about.
Yeah, but, and it's funny because it's, you know, it's not like I didn't know God in the midst of that church or whatever, but so much of my experience with God was so couched in community, let's say, you know, that in some ways it was my experience, but it was also experiencing what God was doing with other people too. And I think that's good. I don't think that's a bad thing, but I do know that for whatever reason, there were some, let's say, not very well-rounded aspects of that where my own, you know, personal relationship with Jesus was just a little bit on the thin side, you know?
Yeah.
So these other experiences like especially moving away to California, you know, because we were out there for almost 7 years, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a while. And, you know, because we didn't leave, you know, the church here to get away from it. It was just, you know, it felt like that's what we were supposed to go do, you know, to go be a part of something happening out there for a little bit. And so we did that. But man, all of a sudden you didn't have this thriving church community around you, you know, and a small one kind of grew up over time. And that was real sweet. But there was this period of time where I was like, I really need to.
Yeah,
really need to get close to God, and you know, I didn't have, you know, a lot of options necessarily to lean on other people right then. You know, so that was real. It was like going to the gym, but you know, through that, like getting to know Jesus, actually getting to know him, not know the things about him, but getting to know him, you know, that's been huge. It changes everything, you know. It's even changed my approach of trying to tell, you know, other people about God. And, you know, I was very church-centric before, and I love the church. I believe in it. I think it's really important to God. I think it's important. Like, I think it's the right environment for Christians, you know? And, you know, like in the New Testament, there wasn't a difference. You know, it's kind of, I guess, kind of an unheard of thing a bit to be a Christian and not be part of the church, you know? But, you know, those Christians, they knew Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, that was the key. That was the thing. It wasn't all about the church.
Yeah.
So that's what I tell my kids. That's what I tell other people. Like, more than anything else, you should know God. You know, he wants to know you.
Yeah.
You know, do you know him? Does he know you?
That's good.
And if I had, I wish that had been more clear to me. I don't think a 10-second little thing would actually give me the clarity I would need. I'd probably be like, whoa, you know. But I don't think that would have given me the clarity I needed at that point.
Right. You would have said, I know that.
Yeah. But, you know. And it's not like other people weren't telling me those sorts of things or anything like that. It wasn't like we didn't talk about Jesus or anything like that, but I don't know. I wish that had been a bit more of a focus early, really, really early for me, you know?
Yeah.
That sounds like a good stopping point to me, unless you have anything else. Parting words for the listeners to say, go ye and be free.
Parting words. No. Jesus loves you, and he's worth loving. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the VeggieTales ending.
No.
God loves you. Gosh.
No, we're not.
You better edit that out.
He loves you very much.
I'm glad you and I are on the same train on this one. It has been a lonely fight against him this whole time.
Hey, I'm just... Sometimes you just gotta quote it, man. Sometimes it's appropriate. Sometimes it's fun. You ever had fun before, Gavin?
No, I don't. I'm a Christian, remember? We don't have fun.
What?
I'm just playing.
You are no nephew of mine.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome.
I love, yeah. I think I've heard bits and pieces of your story, but never like in a complete layout like that. And
yeah, same.
Well, I can make it a lot more complete, but it'd be a long podcast, much longer.
Right.
Yeah.
I've heard intricate small versions of parts of those stories.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, you know, one. I will throw in one quick story because this is an important thing.
Go for it.
I think, and I don't know why I forgot it. So I was miraculously healed.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about this, but I wasn't sure if you just were leaving out.
No, I didn't even think about it. So it was when I was 19. So we would do these big celebrations every year. We called them the Ingathering. At that point, I don't think it had turned into that cultural arts festival, the Village Fest later on.
Right.
But at that point, it was just, we would do this once a year celebration. It was kind of just for the church. And I don't know. It was probably Noah. Like, there always had to be a theme. Like, there was a theme.
I remember
and
that.
For some
We'd
reason, there was
a
like
theme.
A phase where it was like, it was always four things. There was always four.
Yeah.
You know, four seasons or the four winds or. And yes. So this one year, it was the four horsemen. And they were going to do, as part of the celebration thing, one of the evenings, they were going to do these dances and they were going to use horses in these dances. Okay. So one of the guys in the church had bought this horse and it was the red horse. It was kind of a little bit of a reddish brown color. And it was this quarter horse named Shogun. And this horse was muscular. It wasn't that big, but it was muscular. And it was named Shogun for a reason. It was a feisty horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it had barn fever, which means that if you're riding the horse and you go in the general direction of the barn, then it will run because it wants to go to the barn. And it will misbehave to get to the barn. And I think its previous owners had basically... anytime it acted up, they'd put it away. And so it learned, if I wanted to go to the barn, all I got to do is act up. So, I never really rode horses growing up. Mm-hmm. And, my mother-in-law, Mercy, they had had horses all, you know, she had had horses and they were quite comfortable with them and so on. And she had been helping, it was your dad actually that was riding that horse prior to me. And the horse bucked him off into a barbed wire fence.
Oh.
And he decided he didn't want to do that anymore.
That makes sense.
So she approached me. I had no experience with horses, and I don't know why I didn't think that would be a bad idea after hearing about what happened to you.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It might have been because I was trying to impress her daughter. I don't know.
you're like, I'm not going to say anything.
Well, at that point, it's like, at any...
So the idea was anything. I'd learn how to ride this horse, and, you know, we would teach it to do a few simple things, and it would be part of this dance later on in the year. What that really looked like was I was learning how to ride on a horse that needed some real mental help. And so we go out in the field on these hills, you know, and we get to the top of the hill and we turn around and she'd say, okay, try to basically, you know, trot or walk. And the horse would take off full gallop down the hill and doing everything I could to try to rein it in, you know, and then, if it wouldn't listen to you at that point, like we didn't know anything about the natural horsemanship and stuff that they know now in practice. But, you know, so I'd pull the horse's nose to my knee and make it do circles and get it under control, ride it back and so on. And I just remember it was like, it was terrifying.
Oh, yes.
And very stressful. But this went on for a period of days and so on. And then one evening we were trying to put the horse away. And of course he's trying to run to the barn and you can't let him get away with that behavior. So we kept having to stop him. He was getting more and more agitated. And so we were on the road, a gravel road. And, so I was just upset and mad at that point. I was like, behave. Cause I want to be done with this too, you know? So he started trying to take off again. And so I pull his nose to my knee to make him turn, and he just reared up. And you see this in the movies where they rear up and it's, you know, come back down. Well, it wasn't like that. Like he didn't just rear up. He like just threw himself over backwards on top of me. It was a body slam.
So yeah. He actually landed his back up against you and your back up against the gravel.
Yeah. I landed on the road, a full size horse landed on me.
Mm.
And then he was on top of me for a little while, you know, squirming and thrashing his legs, trying to right himself. And we had a saddle, a Western saddle on. So you have a saddle horn that gets jabbed down your abdomen, then slides up all the way up past your ribs with a, I don't know, 700-800 pounds of horse flesh on top of it.
Ooh.
So anyway, he rolled off. And it was just dark at that point, and I remember, it's funny, I remember just vividly, like, looking at the stars, you know, and realizing I'm about to die. I'm going to die. Because everything, like, I don't know if you've ever felt like bones. If you've broken a bone and feel that shift of the bones scraping up against each other and
the warmth.
Things popping and leaking, yes. And so on inside. That was all on my chest and my torso and belly. And I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. And it really hurt. So
by the way, it hurt a lot.
Hurt. I was like, ow.
Dang, I just had like a 700-pound horse on top of me.
Yeah.
You know when you get your finger pricked at the doctor? It was like that.
Yeah, so anyway, Mercy, of course, she ran off to the house, which was,
she
you
just
know,
leaves you kind of like,
well,
out in the road.
She had to go get help. We didn't have cell phones at that point, you know.
Okay.
yeah, this was before cell phones. So she ran off to go get help. And it was probably 400 feet to the house or something like that. And so I'm just laying there. And I think I just remember praying, God help, you know, and then over like a period of a few seconds or so on, it was like, it felt like kind of like a funnel. I don't know. All these sensations I was feeling just kind of got sucked into a funnel and, you know, real quickly just kind of got sucked away and went away. And I was able to breathe and I'm just laying there kind of in shock. Like what just happened,
mm-hmm.
You know? And, and then of course, like, this was while we were living in Mashman, so we got a, you know, about 100 people living in and around this house, you know. And so she goes probably run. I don't know. She probably ran in the house yelling about what happened. And so while she's trying to actually rustle up competent help, all the kids were the first one out the door, right? And so the next thing I know, I'm surrounded by munchkins. You know, I'm like looking up through a sea of little tiny faces. Nobody could help me.
She killed the Wicked Witch.
Yeah. But then Jeshurun, you know,
comes up.
Yeah, he came there. And he's like, "You all right?" And I was like, I think I am. He's like, "Let me help you up, you know?" And so I stood up, and it was only when I stood up I realized that my arm was broken, because I apparently had put it back to break my fall. So I broke my arm right below my elbow. So we walked back out of the house and we got checked out. And aside from that, I had like a little, maybe quarter, the size of a quarter on my back, where it was a little scrape right at the base of my spine. And what? No bruising, no scrapes, cuts. And wow. The broken arm. No, that was it.
Wow. Yeah. So you felt like your ribs were broken?
Oh yeah.
Completely?
Yeah. I don't know how to describe that better. It's just... like, I've broken a couple of bones before, you know, or after, and that's not a nice sensation, you know, to feel that kind of grating, and that was happening multiple places in my body, in my chest, wow. And, like, ribs are broken or so on, and, yeah, but there was no, like, you would think, like, even with a saddle horn sliding up through your belly and your ribs or something, you'd at least be bruised up or something, or nothing.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's cool.
So I knew I'd gotten, I don't know why the arm was left, you know, but.
They're like, oh, we could do the arm too, but like, nah, forget the arm.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, that kept me off the horse.
So oh yes.
Right, maybe that was the whole reason. Yeah. So anyway, but you know, that was funny because even have, that was all prior to kind of that big turn in my life I was talking about earlier, you know, and that kind of stood out to me later. I should have incorporated that more into the story because it wasn't the miraculous thing that really got my attention and saved me. It was actually just experiencing the love of Jesus. That's why I would say that to the 10-year-old, or, you know, that if I had that 10 seconds,
right?
You know, that's why that was the important thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's your final story.
That's good.
Cool.
Thank you for being here.
Thanks for being on that note. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast and taking time out of your busy schedule.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Your many kiddos and your wife and, your schedule. So,
you are welcome. Thanks, guys.
Yeah,
no problem.
Thank you.
That was David Dickerson. Thank you guys for listening to this episode. We hope you liked it. We're very grateful that you tuned in. We're so glad to have you. I mean, yes, yes, we are. I was choking.
He's not kidding.
I'm choking.
And he's also choking on phlegm.
I really like you guys. no, but for real, thank you. Leave us ratings wherever you can if you
so desire.
If you desire to. We have YouTube now for people listening. That's Staying Christian on YouTube.
Really, if you Google us, everything's going to come up. We're verified now, so like...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Everything... I'm dead serious, though. If you Google us, everything is going to come up. So if you are looking, that's where we'll be.
Wow, the music...
The music died because we took so long.
I'm sorry. Anyways, we're on YouTube now. We have a Twitter, Staying Christian. We have an Instagram, Staying Christian.
Yep.
And we have an email address, stayingchristian@gmail.com. You can write us... tell us how poorly we're doing, how much God hates us, and how much you wish we would die. You could do all of that.
All of the above.
I'm even
more.
Considering giving you my phone to text.
I've been trying to steer him away
I
from
I think
that
it'd be
direction.
A great idea. You guys but, can just let me know all the things
mails.
You hate about my voice, how prideful and egotistical I am when I tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Just
exactly.
Just do all that. You can even tell me how much you hate that I tell you to tell me
or
things.
You can tell them to shut up so you guys can be done with the podcast
anyways. Thank you guys for listening.
Yep.
Stay real,
stay Christian.
Bye
bye.